So let's talk in English now. So our final presentation today is going to be about making chatbot human, adopting the technology of human conversation. The person who is going to give this presentation, his name is Paul Pugliero. Paul, PhD, has been designing conversational interfaces for 40 years. At MIT, he received a BS degree in humanities, computer science, and then was hired by Nicolas Negroponte to become a member of the research staff of the MIT Architecture Machine Group, predecessor of the MIT Media Lab. Pugliero earned a PhD in cybernetics with Bosk at Brno University, UK. Pursuing a career as entrepreneur, teacher, researcher, and consultant, he has worked with software startups in New York, Boston, and Silicon Valley in product and technology roles. As a consultant, Pugliero has been engaged by DuPont, Nokia, Samsung, Instituto Itaú Cultural, São Paulo, Ogilvy and Meta, 8 Inc., Intellectual Ventures, and PoetryFoundation.org. He's published papers advocating designing for conversations from his research and his implementations of software products and organization processes. His most recent project is a full-scale replication of Bart's Colloquy of Bubbles at the College of Creative Studies in Detroit, where he is the currently chair and associate professor of the MFA Interaction Design Program. So, let's hear from Paul.
I want to apply models of human conversation. This is what I've said already, and I will walk you I want to propose almost definitions of what it means to have a cooperative, ethical, and humane interest. And lastly, I'll let you know of a crazy conversation with this. So these are my offers in my presentation today. I make them offers. The beauty of the conversation is the conversation in the back and forth can only contain offers. I cannot force you to do something. I cannot force you with my voice to do something, even though sometimes it seems like it can. Story for another time. So, how do we do this? How do we get the lecture to require a conversation? Let's talk about the conversational framework. When we have a conversation, we begin with a goal. Maybe a clear goal, maybe a vague goal, but I want to have a conversation with you now. I want to talk to you about conversation. There is a context. The context is this situation, here and now, with a purpose. We have a reason for being here. We begin in a language that is sufficiently shared. Thank you, translators, for those of you who are using headsets. I love driving translators crazy. It comes naturally to me. It's not something that I have to worry about. I just speak as fast as I might. Actually, I know this translator. I don't know if she remembers me. Yes, she does. She does. From some years ago, I need to look up. The first participant takes an action. Saying something, and maybe waving something. And in you, if I'm speaking to you, this causes something to go on in your brain. You may like it, you may not like it, but if we are lucky, you have a goal similar to my goal. Not exactly the same necessarily, but sufficiently the same for us to engage. And that action invokes an interaction and the participation. And we may, in fact, come to an agreement. I love pizza. I want this instead of that in my society. I want to build this project, not that one. I want to go to dinner with you so that we can have a conversation. These are all agreements. And once we have the agreement, we might have an action or a transaction. We might get together and do something together. Think of this as a model, a simple model. Under it is a more formal model of human conversation. And it works because of these elements. There's a context, a language, an engagement, an agreement, and if the agreement continues, a transaction. This is what we hope for. So that's the human side. Now let's look for a moment at the technology side. I'm going to describe something you've all seen a thousand times. As technologists, we have a person. We have a person who is looking at a screen. Behind the screen is technology, communication, phone, cloud, AI, any kind of technology you can think of. And the technology has an interface which closes the loop. It's very familiar, right? Very simple, very straightforward. But this is not what's important. What's important is what's inside the mind, head, the intention, the purpose of the person who is touching the technology. I'm not telling you anything if you don't know what I mean. So, let's look at a diagram then that takes that into account. Not just the technology diagram, but the human diagram. So there are multiple levels. And at one level, there is an interaction where I say, I want to go to the opera. And at another level, I pull out my phone and I call a cab. This is action and intent. I'm separating out the idea that we have a negotiation for what we want to do together at a level of intent and purpose. And at another level, we say, well, how are we going to get there? Do we want to have dinner? Where do we go? How do we get there? This is what our technology also has, whether or not we think about it this way. So let's go back to Luigi's Pizza and ask the question, how is the technology that is telling us Luigi's Pizza is good, is the best, interacting with us. Well, at the level of goal, at the upper level, it's saying, what it could be telling you is what it is about it that matches your goals. Now, what do I mean by that?
That matches your intention, your values, your desires, your preferences. This is what people do all the time when they're in human conversation. I'm sure all the time people say, where's there good pizza for?
Where's there good sushi for? What do you think I should do with my life? Right? And you answer to them as an individual. You don't think about everyone that you know and aggregate it together and put it into a machine learning algorithm and average it out and say, I think you should go to school or take a job. You make it personal to them. And you make it personal to what you know about them. And this, I believe, is what would make our machines more like human conversations. In human conversations, we're constantly having this association. What do we do and why do we do it? Again, action and intent. This is the same model. But why does it matter? Why does conversation matter? I think, again, we know these things. But in the context of the chatbot convention, where we all want to have voice interfaces, we want the easiness of having the technology everywhere and nowhere and available to us, to what we want, to what I want. To that level of personalization and individuality. Conversation is important because if we want to do something together, we have to agree. In order to agree, we have to have this exchange, this back and forth. And to hold the exchange, we must have at least the beginning of a shared language. And I'm not just meaning with the Portuguese, I mean ideas, interests, values, and beliefs. So, you need conversation to collaborate or cooperate. It's just that simple. What comes from conversation? Anyone care to guess what I might have on this slide? Nothing comes, no. Everything, if you can say everything comes from conversation, that might be a good answer. Here's my answer.
It's not the only answer. Unity.
Unity comes because we decide we will act together. Not as 2 people or 20 people or 1,000 people or 1,000,000 people, but as 1 people. Because we have had exchanges and we've had an agreement sufficient to act together. We will never all be the same. But we can be sufficiently the same to act together. All these require conversation. There are a few more of these slides. I'd much rather be sitting down there with you and asking, what did you think of the other presentations? Did it go well? Is this somehow immediately more human? Is this more interesting?
Don't other fields come along and give definitions to things?
And I offer this as the beginning of a conversation, not as things set in stone. And this is why I call them axioms, proposals, ideas, offers. I think, I believe, my offer is this conversation is cooperative when there's a series of interactions back and forth in which I pretty much follow you and you pretty much follow me, coherent, meaningful, such that we can evolve our points of view, such that in the end, I don't stay where I was and you stay where you were and we're equally far apart and separated, but rather we come together even a little bit. Now, we don't really have to come together, mostly we have to evolve. Maybe I understand your point of view better, but I still disagree with you. I've evolved a little more on your point of view. I know now a little more why you believe what you believe. I'm not okay with that, but we got a little further. Such that we can come to agree. This would be the best outcome. And of course, agreeing to disagree is better than not having conversed at all. So now we come to this thing called ethics. I chair a master's program now in Detroit, as Kyle mentioned. And we have a module on ethics. And all of the great programs around the country that teach AI, or even just teach computer science, are talking about ethics. I can't give you a lesson in ethics. I couldn't do that. I read about it, I like to understand it, I'm not a philosopher, I'm not a teacher of philosophy. But I think we know that ethics means to act well together, to not be harmed. So what would be an ethical interface that does not do you harm? I'm starting a conversation again if you get used to that. I believe that an ethical interface has to be reliable in its transparency, unlike my Luigi's Pizza system. It says Luigi's Pizza is the best, and then it says, no, I'm not going to tell you why. So whose best is that? It's the machine's best. It's not my best. But if I can ask back and forth and say, well, why do you think it's best? And it says, as the earlier slide did, they use wonderful ingredients, and they treat their people well, and they charge reasonable prices, and it's right across the street. And also see the efficiency in the midnight. But the openness and the transparency of that has to be truthful and transparent in order to build trust. These are my own. Now, when you go to a website and there are things called terms and conditions, don't you love to read the terms and conditions and the privacy policies in the very beginning to the very end? No? They're horrible. They're ethical in the sense that it's telling you transparently, well, not in all cases. I don't know if you've read recently about a famous company that wasn't. Anyway. You know what's interesting about that comment is it doesn't matter what you think. Because every company really is likely a hedge. So I think we envisionally an idea of a humane interface where I don't have to read 25 pages, but where I can have an interaction. I can say, no, stop, I don't want to go where you're going. I want to ask you a question, and I would like you to answer that question for me. Will you use my data by selling it to third parties? Yes or no? I'm asking you that question now. It's like when you go to a web page and it's 5,000 words, you think, I don't think I want to read that. But if you had a friend and you could say, Kyle, what paragraph is valuable to me? Or is there a paragraph about privacy or about pizza? Then it could tell you something. And again, if you can influence the direction of the conversation, any participant can say, go here, no, go there, no, go here. Isn't that the fun part? So, collaborative. This is a diagram of a man whose name is Gordon Cass, who Guy mentioned. I did a dissertation with him. And he's developed the frameworks that I'm building on. and bringing it to interaction with time. This is one of these diagrams, which I'd love to tell you about, but not today. Figure 10. The conditions to be satisfied as a prerequisite for creative and innovative activity. So on the left, we have an alpha, person and participant. On the right, we have a beta. And not only are we having exchange at the level of intent and action, we saw those before, but they're crisscrossing back and forth. And that crisscrossing means that this boundary between us, and we act as one. We act as a unity, because we are moving collaboratively together in action and intent. This was his idea. It's simplified in this model. And I challenge the idea of the conversation. Someone earlier had a slide about the conversation. Remember, this is a similar idea. It stays sensitive to who you are. It doesn't go off the deep end and travel into outer space all of a sudden. It keeps its continuity. It leads to agreements, even in agreements that disagree, and it enables you to coordinate. So this is kind of a recap of what we said before. I think AI and conversation interfaces can do these things. If we want them to, we have to want them to, because we are the people who are building these things. What's a great conversation? What's a great conversation? Anyone have a great conversation today? Mm-hmm. Why is it great? You're all tired. Please. When you learn something. When you learn something you didn't know, maybe it surprises you. Those are things you enjoy learning and delight you. So we're on the same page about that. Surprises. Whoa. It's like your brain lights you up and gives you physical energy as a result of the idea that you didn't otherwise have. It's generative. And it evolves the way you could on your own. So if it was just you on one side of that divide, and it was you doing this, you're not going to get as far as when you're doing that. I think we all know that. By the way, these slides are online, and I'll be giving you a row at the end. I'm happy to read these shots, of course. So what makes a great partner in conversation? In my view, again, an author, great questions, says, you know, what you're trying to do, I like it. How you're trying to do it, I think you could do differently. It's a bit like saying, let's go to dinner, and you can't get a cab. So you decide to stay home and make whatever's in the fridge. That's the same goal with different means to achieve the goal, again. Goal, intent. Intent and action. Collaborators need to find new goals. You know that product idea you had? I think that product idea is great, but let's keep going. Maybe we can refine that product to be something else. Oh, you don't like my idea? What's that? What happens in a great conversational part. And ultimately, it helps you to be what you want to be, or what you didn't know you could be. To become something new. This is the extraordinary power of conversation in all of these ways. Will conversational interfaces help us with this? This is a summary. This idea of number of choices is a very interesting ethical point of view. Means that if I, as a designer, enable you to imagine new choices and have more choices than you had before, is that the most ethical thing I can do as a designer? Instead of saying to you, look, you can do these four things and that's it, wouldn't it be better if I could say, well, you could think about these four things, but you could also define your own thing. You could go further than I can go because you are you. And in that conversation together, can we design for more choices? So this is the offer of a model of conversation that comes from a human point of view. I want to tell you a little bit about the project, and then we may have time for questions. The guy I mentioned again, where he asked for that was design conversation, and this period conversation. Here he is standing in front of something that he won't be able to interpret yet. It's part of an exhibit that he did 50 years ago. And the context of that exhibit was a show, a large exhibition of 130 works of art that were shown at the Institute for Contemporary Art in London in 1968. And the show was called Cybernetic. This is the poster from the original show and a series of activities. A lot of it was computer art, computer music, and there were large exhibition spaces. This piece here was a robotic piece that looks kind of like a spine, and when you spoke to it, it would move toward you, and when someone else spoke to it, it would move toward you. You can see the scale of it during his attempts and people speaking up. And this sensation that the entire exhibit caused was remarkable. This was a celebration not of technology, but rather of a synthesis between technology, cybernetic ideas, art. And then there was this. This is Gordon Fast's piece. And as you can see, this is a very large piece. It's life size. There's a mobile here and a mobile here. I'll show you another picture in a moment. A mobile there. I'm just trying to give you a sense of the scale of it. And this is what it looked like in 1968. And this is what it looks like in 2018. We've reproduced it. We've made a replica of this thing. Now, what is this thing? Here again is 1968. And here is 2018. Let me explain and then show Moody about it. This is a so-called female mobile. There are three female mobiles. And this is a male mobile. You'll notice it has some lights and some sensors. They rotate and they move. And they have a kind of conversation. We would think of it as a simple conversation. The only thing the males can do is flash lights, listen, and make sounds. And the only thing the females can do is the same. But past in his sophistication had an idea for what conversation means. It means collaboration. Cooperation. And sometimes a competition. Now, it was possible to do this project because of T.J. McLeish, who is here in a couple of photos, an extraordinary character, who was able to look at the historical record, work with students, and extract from that record, which was the images you're seeing, some very low-res movies, and some descriptions that are wrong of how the original worked. And this is how it operates. The male is flashing its light, and when the pattern of the light tells the female, I, the male, am interested, and when they have a similar interest, then they stop and they interact with each other. And the light from the male hits the mirror of the female. There'll be a close-up in just a second. Here we go. So you see the mirror of the female. Here's the light of the male. It's going to hit the mirror of the female, and the mirror recognizes it, and it stops rotating and is moving its mirror up and down, which reflects the light from the male to the mirror of the female back to the male. This is a very obvious gender joke, which in 1968 was probably extraordinary. Remember, in 1968, autonomous robots interacting with each other, having a conversation in which there's cooperation and collaboration. Let me spend a minute telling you what that is. The males are on a common bar. So if a male attracts a female's interest and wants to stop, that male's drive, this level of interest, has to be higher than the male that's at the other end of the bar in order to force the bar to stop. Are you following? It's a little complicated. So the purpose in showing you this is a few purposes. One is, you don't need a complex, ridiculous, over-technified, in-the-cloud, AI-based ML, 5 trillion calculations a second thing to have a conversation with you. All you need is the idea of what is conversation. It's at a level of goal and a level of intent. The other reason to show it is it's incredibly interactive, organic, analog, embodied. And of course, if you were at a conference where we're talking about hiding all of this shit and just talking to our machines, wait a minute, let's remember what we're really trying to do. We're trying to have interactions. And this makes those interactions manifest, makes them real, makes them open, makes them possible to and say what's important and what's not important about it. And as a gallery show, it's crazy. You give people flashlights and they try to pretend to be the males making interest in the females and back and forth and so on and so forth. So 50 years ago, this was crazy. It was out of the future. But it was asking the questions that we're asking today. What do we want from our technology that is all around us and interacting with us, and yet has a life of its own, you know? So that's the metaphor I wanted to end on. This is a website you can go to, colorfieldmobiles.com. You can see the student work, and you can see more videos. But as we think about Luigi's Pizza, and think about the way that we're wanting to break it down, what's in front of us. So there is no interface. And we're also wanting to break down the issues that we all have with technology, all of the negative things that we've thought about. I offer this way forward. Only one way. What's your way? What do you think? How can we make this fit forward? You can say, I don't agree with any of that. Or you can say this little one thing you said is interesting. Can we talk more about that? Yes, let's talk more about that. And the ultimate goal, again, I would say technology. Einstein Porsche called it an ethical imperative. Act always so as to increase the number of choices. That is our imperative as designers. Not to constrain choices, but to amplify choices. And conversation, I believe, is the most profound way of doing that.
Then
you asking me a question. I don't give you the same answer as I give you when I give you. I think a little bit about who you are. And I select from my knowledge to respond to you. So computers could select from all of the possible answers they have to hear you. Now, how does that happen? That's your question. Well, in the ordinary past, built machines in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s that were all about learning and transfer of knowledge and about selecting the thing that would work now for you. And there are papers on that. I'm happy to talk to you about those. But we have to have a model of why human conversation works. It works because it's highly personalized. It's not an interface such as computing, but because we very quickly have a shared understanding of what we think we know about the other, and we use that to answer. It's sort of mystical the way we do that, right? Give you the teachers to do that, good friends to do that. But we can mechanize that. If we can say, this paragraph and this paragraph are very similar, and this paragraph and this paragraph are different, then we know how they're similar or different. And then we can pick this paragraph for you because it gives you a little bit of new information and not too much. Whereas if I give that paragraph to him, he knows all about it. Don't give him that paragraph. So this is regulating the uncertainty of what's being transferred. So there are techniques inside these, but they have to be thought of. And I feel like the industry is not thinking top-down, they're thinking bottom-up. So that's one answer in just a few minutes that I have, but there are many other answers. And of course, I invite your answers. Thank you.
Hi. When you have an interaction with the same person in possibly in a specific subject, if the same person comes again to a second interaction, then you probably will reach a second agreement. And after that, you will find more and more agreements, and maybe it will be boring for that person if you don't remember all the past agreements. And how would you think it would be the simplest way to manage the complexity? To maintain the agreement some of the time, to remember the past agreements.
A beautiful question also, thank you. The trouble with technology is it forgets nothing. The question is, I think in part, what you're asking is, how do you capture what is shared as a knowledge representation or data representation or modeling problem? That's one issue. The issue on the other side is, of course, I forgot what I said to you yesterday. I will be perfect in my interactions with you, even as a good human conversationalist. But conversation is forgiving. You can say, oh, I told that. Oh, I told that. Okay, sorry. Let's keep going. The conversational interface in itself, I didn't use this word, is forgiving. Because it allows us a constant correction back and forth. Oh, I just made a mistake. It's okay, you corrected it. Sometimes what happens is we're both making mistakes and we don't know it.